Judkins has announced that he is committed to the Ohio State Buckeyes. I'm very, very curious to see what Doug the Baker says about this, or Doug the Buckeye says about this. Maybe he's a baker too.
And he's got a cousin that's a candlestick maker. I'm just saying, it might be a
It's time for the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast.
Hey there, welcome back, sports fans. As we come to you the day after the national championship, that's when we're recording this, released on Wednesday. So I don't know when you're listening to it, but that's when we're recording right now. And we have a lot to say about the national championship game last night. But first, we have some headlines we want to talk about, Darren, some late breaking news items. And let's start with the big news that we heard last Friday out of Oxford, Mississippi. Superstar running back Quinshon Judkins. You remember that famous picture of Lane Kiffin sitting alone in the stand watching this kid play football, and everyone was like, oh man, look what he did, and he committed to Ole Miss. Well, he's not at Ole Miss anymore.
No. Boy, it's a pretty clear case of what have you done for me lately, right? Wow.
And we wondered who opened the money bags.
That's right.
Well, it's no secret any longer.
It is not.
Judkins has announced that he is committed to the Ohio State Buckeyes. I'm very, very curious to see what Doug the Baker says about this, or Doug the Buckeye says about this. Maybe he's a baker too.
And he's got a cousin that's a candlestick maker. I'm just saying, it might be a I have one question for Doug the Buckeye. What did you do? We blame you, Doug. I just want everybody to know. We blame you, Doug.
Doug, how much did you contribute to Ohio State's NIL fund to get Quinshon up there?
You are throwing some money in the bag, sir.
So Judkins leaves to go to Ohio State as they continue to retool their roster this year. Will Howard from Kansas State committed as well. And other news around the league, Mason Smith, defensive tackle for LSU, a former five-star recruit out of Houma, Louisiana. If you don't know where that is, look on a map of Louisiana and go as far south as you can go, and you'll find Houma.
Point in the Gulf and then go up just a little bit with your finger, and there's Houma.
Just a little bit.
I've always heard that down in Houma, they put Tabasco in the baby bottles. I'm just saying. It's what I've always been told. I don't know if it's true, but that's what I've heard. So, at least a little bit.
Why wouldn't you?
No, that's a valid point. That's what people in Houma say. That's what...
Mason Smith came to LSU with a lot of promise, a former five-star, but in 2022, he tore his ACL in that first game against LSU, and the game was actually played in New Orleans, and then he was out that year. This year, did not recapture that 2021 season. I don't know who's advising him to go to the NFL, but I'm not sure that this is a good decision on his part. I just don't see anybody picking him up before the third or fourth round.
No, I agree completely. But, you know, at the same time, stories have been made. You get picked up in a late round, you impress somebody in an off season, you know, during camp, and you make yourself, even if it's just special teams, you find your spot in the roster, and you end up with a 5-6-7 year career. To me, my concern is, I think part of what seemed like it was the issue is that it never was just this full recovery from the injury, whether that be physically, mentally, a combination of both. Things just never clicked the way they did prior to the injury. And maybe sometimes a change helps kind of that click, that light switch go off, whatever it is. So hopefully that's the case for him. But like you said, there's nothing about the way last year went that makes you think, oh, well, the NFL is the next obvious step. But hopefully it's one of those stories that we're talking about in a few years that you didn't see it coming, but he worked his way onto a roster and had a great career.
He has the size, no question about it.
Absolutely.
He has the strength. He has the skills. Yep. If that all comes together again as he another year removed from that devastating injury, he could make an NFL roster and have an impact. And like you said, have a nice career. The talent level is definitely there. With him leaving, however, joining Meke Wingo, another great defensive tackle for the Tigers. Now they're going to have to replace both defensive tackles on that starting defensive front. Now they'll do that, of course, but two losses nevertheless.
Yep.
Now over in Tuscaloosa, news came out that leading rusher Jace McClellan has also declared for the NFL. He finishes this season 890 yards, 8 touchdowns. Along with him declaring for the NFL draft, and we learned about Roydell Williams entering the transfer portal. Now Alabama's replacing its top two rushers from last year as well.
And you wonder if part of that is and of course we don't have anything to go on. This is just strictly speculation, not any kind of reporting. But I wonder if part of that is just a retooling of the roster as well. The change in OC going to Tommy Rees, going to a little bit of a different system, even though it obviously still works within Saban's system. Things are going to continuously over the first couple of years of an offensive coordinator change. Things are going to look a little bit different. Things are going to morph and change. And so you wonder if maybe this is a little bit, even if it's not the coach is saying you don't necessarily fit, if it's the player making a recognition of this system is not where I'm going to grow. This system is not where I'm going to be maximized. Time for me to move on. And so you got to wonder if that's not at least a little bit of what's going on with both of these guys.
Very well could be. Anytime there's coaching changes, these things tend to happen. Yep. In addition to the people that are in their circle of influence, advising them on which direction to go, it always plays a big, big factor.
Absolutely.
Not only are players making moves, but coaches also are making moves. Kevin Steele, after 40 years of coaching, 13 of those in the SEC, has announced his retirement. This past year, he served as the defensive coordinator for Alabama in a unit that really performed well. But this guy, you look at the guys he coached with, Tom Osborne, Johnny Majors. He has been Bobby Bowden.
Incredible. Absolutely. He's
been with some well-known coaches. And what a great career for Kevin Steele.
And you know what? Good for him. 40 years in, looking at the landscape of what college football looks like, you know what? Like I said, good for him. It's time for me to just, I'm good. I've had an incredible career. Just like you just said, look at the people I've had the opportunity to share a sideline with. Thank you for everything you've done for me, college football. Have a good day. It's time for me to go home. And how can you blame him? Good for him.
It's time to ride off into the sunset.
Exactly. Exactly.
So congratulations, Kevin Steele, on your 40 years of coaching.
Yep.
Now, a guy that's on the other end of that spectrum who still is relatively young in his coaching career is Blake Baker, who recently was hired by LSU as their new defensive coordinator after a year where the defense underwhelmed. What were they, 105th in total defense overall? They gave up 47 points in three games, was it?
I think underwhelmed is missing the mark. I don't even think that's accurate.
It was bad.
Yeah, it was bad.
LSU had the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. They had receivers, one who set the all-time receiving yards mark at LSU.
Exactly.
It's just one of those years. We're going to talk about this for a long, long time. What if the defense had been top 50 or top 40 or 30?
That's right. Oh, absolutely.
And that caused Brian Kelly to almost do a complete clean sweep of the LSU defensive coaching staff. He retained one analyst and brought in Blake Baker, who's no strange name to LSU. He served as the linebackers coach in 2021. So this is somewhat of a homecoming for him. I think his first coaching stint was at Louisiana Tech. Is that right, Darren?
Yes. He started out at Louisiana Tech and worked his way up. It was the first D coordinator coordinating position as well at Louisiana Tech.
He's had success everywhere he's gone, most recently for the past two seasons at Missouri, where he turned that unit around. And we saw what they did this year, and we saw they held Ohio State to 3 points in the Cotton Bowl. Granted, Ohio State didn't have their top 10 quarterbacks playing, but still, but giving up only 3 points is only giving up 3 points. Yep. So a lot of excitement in Baton Rouge over the hire of Blake Baker. It's a homecoming also. I believe his wife is from the Baton Rouge area.
I think that's right, somewhere in that area. And went to LSU as well. Is that correct?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's so. Right. And I tell you, I've heard it said 1,000 times. I won't claim it to be an original thought of mine, but I've heard it said many, many times before. If you want to know how good a coach or coordinator is, you can often judge that by the reaction of the fan base that they're leaving and the Twitter reaction just when this was coming, just when it started to kind of leak. There were some people that thought they had discovered something on the LSU website and that his name was up there and the years were wrong and it looks like he's coming and all this. And the reaction of Missouri fans on Twitter was just atomic. They were not impressed. They were taking shots immediately. Why would he leave? There's no way. I mean, there was just this immediate reaction of, you can't have this guy. There was a whole lot of, you already had a chance at him, chose not to retain him, in quotation marks. It doesn't work that way. You can't have him back. Just Missouri fans were upset. So that should tell you a little bit. When a fan base is that upset about losing a coordinator, that tells you the job the guy's done and how good his defensive unit was.
He had recently signed an extension with Missouri and from all intents and purposes looked like he was happy there.
Yep.
But like with everybody, Darren, there's always those few jobs. You may be happy where you are, but if somebody from this place came calling,
absolutely.
And I think that's what happened here. I think LSU was one of the few places that he would leave to take a defensive coordinator position. And it just worked out that way. So I don't think it was any slight to Missouri. I think he was happy with Missouri. He certainly did a great job with him. But LSU had that personal pull along with the job offer. And I think that's ultimately what did it for him.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think with every coach, especially in the college ranks more so than professional, there's that one school. Whether you grew up as a fan or you played there or, you know, with Vanderbilt and James Franklin, James Franklin would have left, not a doubt in my mind. I do not believe he would have left as quickly as he did if it were not the Penn State job, because that was the job. He grew up in Pennsylvania. He grew up a Penn State fan. It was a no-brainer. All they had to do was call, and the conversation was over. It didn't work out as well as, well, I guess most people think James Franklin has, but same thing with Scott Frost in Nebraska. All they had to, things were going great at UCF. All they had to do was call. There's that one job for most guys that work their way, especially if they've played somewhere, grew up somewhere, loving, you know, being a fan of a team as they grew up, stuff like that. There's always kind of that one school, and I think you're very much right. That seems to be the case for this as far as making the move to a D coordinator, and who knows what that looks like down the road. You know, Brian Kelly's been very open about, you know, this is the last stop on the Brian Kelly train. You know, he puts a couple of national championships in the bag. Who knows what that looks like down the road as far as, you know, being a D coordinator on the staff. So I think it's a decision, again, not a slight to Missouri in any way, but it's a decision that definitely makes sense.
Yeah, I agree completely, Darren. I agree completely with your comments. Well, we've got a lot more to talk about in the show, including the national championship game. But before we get there, let's pause for this week in sports history.
January 17th, 1960. group of golf professionals and several leading amateur golfers gather at the Capello Club in New York City in a meeting that will result in the founding of the Professional Golfers Association, or PGA. This was the first of several meetings held over the next several months, and on April 10, 1960, the PGA was officially established with 35 charter members. Wanamaker proposed that the newly formed organization hold an annual tournament and offered to donate money for a trophy and prize. In October, the first annual PGA championship took place at the Seminole Country Club in Bronxville, New York. James M. Barnes defeated Jock Hutchinson in the championship match, taking home the trophy and a purse of $2,580.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations to the Michigan Wolverines, winners of the national championship game in a dominating performance against the Washington Huskies, 34-13, a game in which Michigan rushed for 303 yards, 200-yard rushers. We knew Blake Corum, he's had a great season, great playoff. He finished with 134 yards, and Donovan Edwards finished with 104 yards. Michigan averaged 7.8 yards of play. And at halftime, it was 20-13. That sounds like a close game, Darren, but this never felt like a close game. Michigan bullied Washington on the both lines, offensive, defensive lines. I sat there thinking, Darren, all right, Washington, you asked for it. Welcome to the Big Ten.
That's right. Show us you earned your spot. Let's go. You just got pushed around and you got pushed around and you got pushed around. And I tell you, no matter what narratives there are around this Michigan team, boy, the line of scrimmage is undeniable. You talking about doing what they wanted at will. They did it. They did it all night long. Kind of the one glaring, kind of crazy stat that doesn't make any sense is their first down, their third down efficiency was horribly awful, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, which may have something to do with play calling, as you know, because that's always an option. But outside of that, whatever they needed, they got it. And I mean, it's evidenced by the fact you have 300 yards rushing and 200 yard rushers. Absolutely incredible what the both sides of the ball, what the line of scrimmage was able to do for this Michigan team.
Quarterback for Michigan, J.J. McCarthy, had nothing spectacular. I think he threw for 140 yards, no touchdowns, but did enough to help his team win. And again, I think this game was won up front.
Yep.
So congratulations to Michigan. I think, though, I'm a little bothered, Darren. I'm a little sad that I would have loved to see a Michigan-Georgia matchup this year.
Yes.
And we were agreed deprived completely. Of that.
Yeah. So.
But nevertheless.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things. The further we get removed from this, that'll become a part of the conversation that honestly gets a little bit louder when you look at these two teams in retrospect to Georgia and Michigan. Man, what a game. I think history will magnify that even more, and it'll kind of become the thing that people talk about, truthfully, when it comes to this year, much more than the – because honestly, at the end of the day, it was kind of a lackluster game. It wasn't this overwhelmingly exciting. I mean, you were impressed with the rushing attack of Michigan. You were impressed with what their offensive and defensive lines were able to do. But outside of that, it was really kind of a lackluster game. And I think that storyline of what could have been will become the larger talking point, kind of like it has with some of the games we saw during the BCS era. People talk more about what game should have happened than what game did happen. And I think that's what we'll see with this game as well. I think it's a great point.
Good riddance to the 4-team playoff. We are now in the era of the 12-team playoff. which will drastically change the makeup of the playoffs.
That's right. When there are six SEC teams every year, it's going to look different. That's right. Oh, wait. Just saying.
I saw what you did there. It was a disappointing final game for Michael Penix,
yes,
who was the runner-up in the Heisman Trophy voting. And after the Texas game, some were saying, oh, maybe we voted too soon. Look at what Penix is doing. He didn't do that in this game. For whatever reason, the Michigan defense, you certainly have to put them in the equation of that. Mm-hmm. He was off. His throws were not accurate. He was throwing high. He was throwing behind his receivers. It was sad to see, because he's had such a remarkable career coming back from, what, three major injuries in the span of his college career.
Season-ending injuries, yeah.
To get to this level. But two interceptions, one touchdown pass. I think he finished, with 255 yards passing. Mm-hmm. Definitely not the numbers that we expect to see from Penix.
And can I just throw my two cents worth in, not to speak negatively of anyone at all, and not to claim that I'm some great decision maker because I wasn't on the sidelines, but it kind of hurt my feelings a little bit to see him still in the game at the end of the game when they had no chance to win, and he's holding his side underneath that rib protector. If whatever happened is creating that much pain and he's wearing that thick of a rib protector, I mean, you got to be thinking, you know, has something been lacerated? Has something been, I mean, get him out of the game. Again, not to be negative, not to cast any aspersions in any way. Just at least want to throw that out there. It made me uncomfortable, because what's going on at that point? I mean, put somebody else in. He's obviously left everything he had on the field. Nobody's going to doubt that. Nobody's going to speculate that if you left him in the game, you might have. He's given you everything he's got. Let him stand on the sidelines. Let someone treat him for whatever is going on, and let somebody else finish that last couple of minutes of the game. I felt unnecessary, and I hated to see it for him, especially knowing the injury history that he has. I would have liked to have seen him come out of the game during those last couple of minutes.
Yeah, it's a tough call. We don't know what's happening on the sidelines. He may be begging his coaches to stay in. It's his last college game ever.
Absolutely.
But like you said, you also want to consider the safety of the player. And so it just definitely was not the night he wanted to end his – that's not the way he wanted to end his college career. Now, with no disrespect to Michael Penix at all, for those who were questioning Jaden Daniels winning the Heisman Trophy, did we vote too early? Let me throw this statistic out to you. Jaden Daniels finished with, I believe, 11 more touchdowns, roughly 30 more yards, and 7 less turnovers in 3 less games than Michael Penix.
And you know what? I'll add one thing to that. Don't even look at a statistic. If you have any questions in your mind, go back and watch, just randomly pick 3 games from Michael Penix this year. And pick 3 games to watch from Jaden Daniels this year. And then tell me honestly if you think the wrong decision was made. It will be a no-brainer. Even if you don't know a single stat, it will be a no-brainer. Because all you have to do is watch what Jaden Daniel did in every single game. And nobody else in the country did that in any game, much less in every game this season.
Michigan finishes 15-0, the 5th team in history to finish 15-0. Penn did it back in 1897, Clemson in 2018, LSU in 2019, moment of silence.
There you go.
Georgia in 2022, and now Michigan in 2023. So a great season for the Michigan Wolverines. A lot of turmoil going on throughout the season, but they finished 15-0. They are the national champions.
Absolutely.
And wouldn't you know that Doug the Buckeye had to chime in about this?
Oh, is he excited about the Big Ten bookend? You know, they won one at the end and one at the beginning of the – never mind. It's probably not what he had.
Don't feed him more information that he can use, Darren.
That's on me.
So here's a quote that he sent in, and I said, yeah, we'll share it in the show. From Doug the Buckeye, all is well in the universe. The planets have aligned, and the SEC bias in the college football playoffs has finally been exposed. Alabama should have never made it, having already lost to Texas. That cheating team up north did its job and sent Bama packing. The Big Ten has returned to its rightful spot in the national championship game, and you could argue as national champions. Mm-hmm. And Doug concludes by saying, I say bring on the real college football playoffs and go Buckeyes. So thanks. thanks for the feedback, Doug.
Yeah. There's a lot in that statement. We'll say that. And I tell you what, I've already said, Doug, what did you do? And I still stick by that. And he did mention the bookend there. They ended with the Michigan bookend. The team up north won that final championship of the playoff or the four-team playoff era. But most importantly, as we've talked about before, the one thing we can all three agree on is so long to these four teams. Come on, 12 team. I think we all agree on that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fact that if Ohio State wants to make it to the national championship game, they're probably going to have to score more than 3 points in their playoff game.
And they're probably going to have to beat one, maybe two SEC teams. So can't wait to talk about that next year, Doug. But anyway, that's and speaking of people who we think are from the Big Ten that have comments, our episode last week where we talked about some of the issues with Michigan and some of their off the field scandals. We'll just leave it at that. I think we've discussed it enough. We had a listener by the name of James Leonard chime in on YouTube. And say, listening to two SEC guys talking about cheating is hilarious with a laughy cry face. So I wanted to take a moment and acknowledge his comment about SEC being so prolific in cheating, obviously. And we're going to take a moment and just put up here on the screen the list of all SEC coaches that were suspended either at the beginning of the season, at the end of the season, or maybe both, as was the case with the Big Ten. So let's go ahead and – oh, wait, it's a blank page. What must have just been a Big Ten thing. I don't see any names, do you?
James Leonard, that's not Jim Leonard from Wisconsin, is it?
You know, well, it would be Big Ten, so there you go.
Thank you for the comment.
You
hit it on the head. We do have a lot of SEC bias, and there may be a little bit of irony in us talking about it. But as Darren pointed out, I think you made our case. Have you ever thought about the legal profession, Darren? That was well played.
I have so many comments in my head, but no, I'll just say no.
Well, maybe we can get you a John Grisham book to read to inspire you.
That's probably where that came from. I do love those books, so that's probably where that came from.
Speaking of SEC teams, let's look at the final top 25 AP poll. Michigan winds up at number one, Washington at two. As far as SEC teams, and we're already including Texas and Oklahoma in the equation. Texas at three, Georgia at four, Alabama at five. Missouri at 8, Ole Miss at 9, LSU at 12, Oklahoma at 15, Tennessee at 17. So there's 8 SEC teams finishing in the final top 25 poll. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic. And I think it shows, to me, one of the really interesting things is you see just how many teams are in the top 25. And some of those teams had exceptional years, years beyond what they anticipated, even with high hopes. Missouri, Ole Miss, you know, both of those teams had high hopes, But I don't think either one of those teams were sitting around going, you know, the fan bases were saying, well, you know, 11 wins and we've finished up that, you know, that New Year's Day bowl win. Yeah, you know, neither one of those teams were, they were hoping, but maybe not realistic. But outside of those couple of instances, you know, Tennessee fans feel like their year didn't really hit where they wanted it to be. Alabama fans, up until they kind of hit their stride there toward the end, wasn't the year they were looking for. Obviously, Georgia fans not having the year. So there were a lot of fan bases that felt like they had a down year. There were teams that had a down year compared to what the levels of anticipation were, and you still end up with eight teams in the top 25. It's a pretty exciting thing about the future as things continue to build and as we look toward a 12-team playoff. I think that's pretty exciting for the entire conference.
Absolutely. And the fact that we're moving from the four to the 12-team playoff raises the level of expectation for next season for SEC teams.
Absolutely.
Speaking of AP polls, let's do a quick update on the men's and women's basketball top 25 as far as SEC teams. On the men's side, Tennessee is at number 5, Kentucky at 6. Oklahoma, we're already counting them, even though they're technically still in the Big 12, at number 9. Auburn at 16, Texas at 25. Over on the women's side, South Carolina is continuing their hold on the number 1 spot. LSU continues to be stuck at number 7. Yeah. But hey, I hear good things about number 7.
That's right.
And Texas at number 10. So that's where the current rankings are on the men's and women's side in college basketball. So a lot of SEC activity. And we're going to be, as we near closer to March Madness, we're going to be talking more and more about SEC baseball as well. So a lot going on right now if you're a sports fan. I know somebody was talking to me the other day or yesterday as the game began to wind down last night. I can't believe college football is over. Yeah. And it is a day of mourning in the South every year. So, but we have a lot to look forward to.
And I will say, those of you that are genuinely sad and understandably so, let me share some good news with you. Only 227 days till kickoff. So we're getting closer with each day. Only 227. Matter of fact, at the time you're watching this, maybe 226, 225. We're getting closer and closer. So just enjoy baseball and basketball. It will get you there.
The countdown has started. And if you're having trouble coping with the loss of college football, let us know. We'd be happy to treat you to a slice of king cake and maybe a nice cup of chicory coffee. It'd be our treat if that's what will help you get through these first few days of no college football. Then let the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast be there to help you out.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you watching. Thank you again for your support. And we will be back next Tuesday. New episode will release sometime in the wee hours of the morning. If you're not up that early, you can catch it later when you've had your cup of coffee and you're finally awake. Whenever you listen and whenever you watch, we're very grateful for you, for you supporting us in that way. Remember to hit that subscribe button, and then you won't miss any updates on when new shows come out. We sometimes throughout the year, we'll do a bonus episode and you'll be notified about that when those happen. So hit that subscribe button. So you don't miss a single show. Again, thank you for watching and we'll see you next week. Until then, take care.
Have a great week. Thank you for making the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast your go-to sports show. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show if you haven't already. Your feedback is important. Let us know what you think about this week's show. Send an email to brewandshavers@gmail.com or text to our text line, 318-390-3599. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you again for listening to the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast. See you next week.